Hey, it's already Tuesday. The week is flying by. Soon it'll be Monday. Again, I'm not sure the days really matter, at least for some of us. And I realize the days seem to be blurring together, but we sure appreciate you tuning in, trying to balance breaking news with some uplifting news. And some days it's harder than others to find that uplifting news, but we have some coming up at 4:20. Stick around for that. DJ hanging out with me today. Dave Josephson producing. Jor is off. She is probably creating havoc somewhere in New Hampshire. I keep expecting her to pop up on CNN or Fox News, but she's up at Lake Winnipesaukee hanging out with a friend who has a cabin on Lake Winnipesaukee. So that sounds like a pretty good deal to me. Couple of stories that caught my eye, just fairly breaking news here. Anthony Fauci basically believes that masks should be mandated everywhere, but it shouldn't come from the top. It should come from local governments, according to Dr. Fauci. He said local governments should institute such mandates rather than the federal government. It would be nice to have some consistency from city to city, state to state. Not sure we'll ever have that, but I noticed that retailers are asking governors to mandate masks. The Retail Industry Leaders Association, which represents Target, Home Depot, and other major chains around the nation, says different rules around the country have made it confusing for shoppers and often lead to conflict between customers and workers trying to enforce store rules. I went into Micro Center in St. Louis Park, where I go for all my computer needs. This is not an endorsement, but they're getting one anyway. That's where I go. Bought my Dell laptop there. Love it. Just bought a monitor there. And there it's not optional. You have to wear a mask, but you're greeted by a really cheerful guy with a big smile who asks how we can help. And I noticed if you don't have a mask, they are happy to provide you with a free mask. But if you want to shop at Micro Center in St. Louis Park, you have to have a mask. So, okay. Thankfully, there were no verbal confrontations, at least not while I was there. There's still a perception that, only older people catch this thing. Not to worry, I'm young, I'm Teflon. It's just a little flu. That's what Brazil's President Bolsonaro said for the longest time. He called it the little flu. Well, Brazil's president has said that he has now tested positive for COVID-19 after months of downplaying the virus's severity. Brazil has the most confirmed cases of any nation outside the U.S. We are still number one when it comes to coronavirus, the most cases, and sadly, the most deaths. Speaking of deaths, after a brave three-month struggle, beloved Broadway actor Nick Cordero just died of complications from coronavirus on Sunday. A recent dad, 41 years young, reportedly had no underlying health conditions, but his health struggles lasted long after he repeatedly tested negative for the virus. The timeline of Nick Cordero's decline is a tragic reminder that even younger, healthy people can get sick and die from this thing. Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood have pushed back their Facebook concert out of an abundance of caution after potentially being exposed to novel coronavirus. Statement came out: while Garth and Trisha are fine, the Garth-Trisha camp has possibly been exposed to the COVID-19 virus. And I found it interesting, and I can vouch for this, about a fifth of U.S. adults have moved or know somebody who has moved because of the pandemic, according to a new Pew Research study. Many of the people who moved were students who lived on campus and were forced to leave when their campus shut down. 28% of U.S. adults who relocated said they moved to reduce their risk of contracting the virus. Other reasons, financial, job losses, or just to be with family. This Pew Research study found that young adults most likely to have moved because of the pandemic. A search for safety and more space. More than 60% of the adults who moved said they relocated to a family member's home, while the rest moved into vacation homes with friends or temporary housing. Got a real estate broker, a friend up north in the Brainerd Lakes area, who said that the homes are flying off the market. People are buying second homes, third homes, Brainerd Lakes, Alexandria Lakes, for safety. More space, fewer people, maybe lower odds of contracting the virus. So I thought that was interesting. A lot of grim news out there. There are good people doing amazing things. And yes, Minnesota, we have amazing safety nets like Perspectives. I want you to hear about what this agency Perspectives is doing to help recovering moms and their kids who are enduring rehab and people who are homeless right now. Talk about a triple whammy. We'll have that story next. Paul here. What's that old saying? May you live in interesting times. I don't think it's a compliment. And yeah, these are interesting times. We've got this toxic cocktail of challenges facing us, and we're going to get through this. It's already been bumpy, and it may get bumpier before things get better. But between the pandemic, the recession, this racial reckoning that America is going through right now, we're adding stress upon stress upon stress. And some of us can handle these stresses better than others. With us, and frankly, joining us from the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline, Linda Domholt is VP of Development and Communications, and Sarah Crone, who's VP of Clinical Services at Perspectives. Ladies, it's great to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having us, Paul.
Yes, thanks for having us, Paul.
You bet. Glad you could make some time and tell listeners about the amazing things that Perspectives is doing. And the more I drill down and discover what you have been doing for so long, the more impressed I am. Linda, can you give us an overview about what is Perspectives and what makes your outreach different?
Sure. Thank you again for the time. So Perspectives has been around a very long time, Paul. We were founded in 1976, and for the last 40 years, our focus has been homeless, recovering women and children. We have a housing campus in St. Louis Park with five apartment buildings that form a community, and our families come to us directly from homeless shelters, and they move into one of 50 fully furnished apartments. And what we do is we have a full set of wraparound services, from housing, case managers, clinicians, licensed school teachers, a chef, an after-school program, drivers, daycare, and this whole team comes around our families to address the challenges that they have had around their sobriety, mental health, nutrition, employment, parenting skills. Families are with us on an average of 2 years, and Sarah and her team does that work to try to address what Hennepin County says is some of the hardest to serve people in our community.
Linda, I can't imagine. I mean, this is hard enough for all of us, but people who are going through recovery, who are trying to get back up on their feet, I mean, how are you responding to this epic challenge when all of us are stressed?
Yeah, I'm gonna let Sarah answer that one.
Sarah, how would you answer that?
Yeah, well, I think that's a big question, Paul. As you may have heard, some of the discussions around concerns that our country is on the verge of a mental health crisis as a result of the COVID pandemic alone, right? We know that research has shown that when diseases or other large social or large scale disasters strike, they cast sort of a shadow pandemic of psychological and societal injuries. And then when this happens, we often see increases in suicides, overdose deaths, and substance use disorders. So those very people that you referenced, the people who are trying to work on recovery in the midst of this crisis, are especially struggling right now. And the ability to have access to quality mental health and substance use disorder treatment is absolutely crucial.
Sarah, can I expand on that real quickly? I mean, with the tragedy with George Floyd, I mean, the trauma and the pain that people of color are feeling right now. I mean, how does all of that come together, and how has that changed how you get things done and your ability to help?
Yeah, I think, if we start with just the COVID pandemic and the response there, right, we are seeing, just like the rest of the country is seeing, I mean, the increase in need for social support and mental health support, we're seeing that at Perspectives. And then when the crisis of the murder of George Floyd happens, it, of course, amplifies all of the kind of emotional struggles and difficulties people are having. And yet, in a time like COVID, COVID has necessitated a decrease in normal social contact, and it's encouraging increased isolation. So in this time where we feel a bit restricted and our supports are less than they normally are, we are also dealing with really big issues around race and equity and justice, and all of the emotional stuff that comes with processing through all of that. So it's a quite difficult and unique time for our folks.
What we've tried to do, Paul, is we've tried to create space like everybody where we're listening, and we create opportunity for people to share. We've been able to utilize, like everyone else in the world is, utilizing Zoom. And we built a telehealth suite in one of our apartments. Thankfully, because our five apartment buildings are in a cul-de-sac, we have an outdoor space that we can use. Our women, 80%, 85% of the people we serve are people of color. So they built a memorial to George, and we're just doing a lot of listening. And as Sarah said, trying to be as supportive as possible, given the constraints that the virus gives us.
So if listeners know people who may be in need right now, a recovering mom, who just is at her wit's end, who's caring for small children, how do you go about making sure that people that need help can get the help they need? And are you at capacity? Do you have any capacity left to be able to intake any more people who need help?
Yeah, well, we do. We have kind of continual capacity with the shift of our clients. Yet our clients do come strictly from homeless shelters, as Linda mentioned earlier. There are a lot of services out there that people can refer their loved ones to who may be struggling with substance use disorders or mental health issues, parenting issues. When they're struggling with those things, in addition to homelessness, of course, the various county entities can help with those kinds of things. Our program, again, we get people right from the homeless shelters, and so that's our referral source.
We would, though, Paul, be one of the voices that would be supporting as we're looking at some of the racial equity issues and the issues with the police department, that realizing that there is a need, there is a huge need in our community to expand access and services of both mental and chemical health, and not have that be the responsibility of police officers, but that we have to look and address some of those things ourselves. And as Sarah said, there's numbers out there, but the need far exceeds the capacity in our community.
Absolutely.
Well, we had a mental health crisis before the pandemic, before this racial reckoning. We had a loneliness epidemic. How can people reach you? What's the best way to reach out if they have a need or know somebody who may have a need?
Well, they can. So our website is perspectiveswithas-family.org. And they can go there and they can find out contact information and our email info line. And we can actually send people the resources and that we might have available for them.
Terrific. Well, we appreciate what you are doing to help so many people, and keep it up. Stay safe. And thanks for coming on CCO and letting everybody know what's going on.
Thank you, Paul. We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
You bet. You bet. Hang in there. That Linda Domholt and Sarah Krohn from Perspectives. So check that out. And again, in spite of all the turmoil, I mean, we still have amazing safety nets in the Twin Cities and across the state. Could we use more? Absolutely. But grateful for the people who are stepping up and making a difference and trying to improve the lives of others. And at the end of the day, that's why we're here, right? Try to help each other. Anywho's, when we get back, I read today, and you can't believe everything you read, that based on last season, specifically Major League Baseball, last season's records, the Twins may have the easiest schedule in all of baseball. It's going to be a short season. Will it be a sweet season? Mike Max, next. Paulie, back with you. Thanks for tuning in. And so grateful for DJ. Not only does he push the buttons and keep me honest, or try to, but he is a vital part of this show with a great on-air voice and the voice of reason most days. Aaron Gleeman, writing for The Athletic, wrote earlier today that every team in Major League Baseball will play 40 of its 60 games against the other four teams in its division, facing them 10 games apiece. For the Twins, 67% of all games will be against the Indians and the White Sox, the Royals and the Tigers. And according to Gleeman, the Twins have the easiest schedule in all of baseball based on last season's records. So I found that interesting. I'm easily amused. But I want to hear from Mike Max. It's going to be a short season, what, 60 games? And the fact that it's regional baseball now, does that help our prospects of getting to the playoffs? Michael, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
You sound a little bit different.
I do?
Yeah. Is that the way it's coming through, or is that... I don't know, but you sound fine. It just is, for a second there, I said it's almost like something's coming through my headset different.
I'm going through puberty. My voice has dropped.
That's what it is. I knew that would happen sooner or later.
It's about time.
I think it helps the Twins because I think their schedule is easier than it would be when you look at some of the beasts in the East, as they say. Although Boston is more of a rebuilding now than. And they made their trade to the Dodgers, but you don't face the Yankees. Tampa's obviously been formidable. Toronto and Baltimore, you never know about. So you miss a lot of that. You miss the Southern swing. You don't know the Angels are decent, nothing great. Your interleague play, the Dodgers are obviously a great team projected as. Oakland's always good and competitive. So you take those out of the equation, but then the other part is you get to stay in the same time zone, really, for all of it. So there are no real bad road trips. I mean, Pittsburgh is the furthest away that you fly.
Okay.
Now, yesterday, Rocco Baldelli said, we got right there in the middle of 36 games in 37 to 38 days. And the funny thing is, Paul, every coach that I've ever known or seen looks at the schedule at the beginning of the year, and they all find reasons that they think, we got screwed here. But everybody plays the same schedule, you know. Everybody
right,
plays
right.
Same amount of games, same amount of home. But that's just the way that, that coaches and managers tend to look at it. But they open with the White Sox. White Sox are coming a little bit. They've got some young talent. Detroit's not supposed to be very good at all. Kansas City, I don't think, is very good at all. Cleveland's okay. They've got a chance again. They had a good season last year. They traded away Corey Kluber to Texas. Won't see him. So they're. Decent, could be formidable, hard to say. But the big X factor here, Paul, is not so much your competition, but in baseball, there's such a small margin for error in every game that it would be just as easy to win six of your first seven as it would to lose six of your first seven. There's not that big a difference, but the difference is you can't make it up this year. If you go south at all, you can't make it up. If you have bad streaks, it's going to be hard to catch them just doing the math in a 60-game schedule. It's 2.5 games per game if you want to do the math that way on the compared to a what would be a 162-game schedule. So that tells you about the magnitude of it. So that could change the way they play, meaning starters might not go. If a starter is struggling, they might be quick to give them a hook, especially with expanded rosters. You could see, you know, bullpen guys move up a little bit and pitch the fifth inning instead of the eighth or ninth inning. Things like that could happen because you really are playing for wins every night. And that is going to be, I think, what captivates us is that there's more pressure, more intensity. If a team gets off to a bad start, it's probably not going to be much fun for that fan base for the rest of the year because they're not much hope. But I think that's what's going to make this thing really kind of a fun study is, you know, everybody's playing for a lot right out of the gate, and it all matters, and every week matters a lot, and there's no chance. If you get behind the eight ball on this thing, you're not going to make it up in September.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I have questions about making up games. I mean, forget about COVID-19. Set that aside.
You know, I hadn't even thought about that, Paul.
Just the weather.
Yeah.
I mean, how many games get canceled, rain delays or cancellations? 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10, maybe? And August, the Twins have one day off the whole month.
Yep.
One day off. If there are games that are canceled just because of thunderstorms, how on earth are you going to make that up?
Yeah, especially if it's a bad streak of weather, something like that. Now, they've left a little buffer zone at the end of the year before the playoffs. That's the way it's set up. And what they would do, I'm sure, is they'd say, if those games are deemed meaningless, meaning they don't have an impact on the standings, they just won't play them. And they may have to wait until the end of the year. But if you had a real bad streak of weather or, God forbid, a hurricane hit some area, something like that, it would be problematic to your point. And I hadn't even thought about that part of it, but you don't have a lot of room to move around here like you do the other times. What will happen then is you will have to play double headers, which is something teams don't like that much, especially 2 9-inning games. But they will have to play some real 18-inning kind of days and expand the roster and see if you can get through it. And that's just that's what they're up against right now.
Maxie, hey, DJ jumping in here. It's so fascinating this MLB season is, you know, everything's different. You say, oh, I didn't even think about the weather. And as we're thinking about getting all these games in, one of the things that's a barrier when we talk about getting games in is you have to move 35,000 fans in and out of a ballpark before you can start a doubleheader, or you got to figure out the ticketing and all those things.
Great
How is that going to change when the only thing we have to handle is the 30 guys on the roster and a couple of cameramen, and we can just play the game any time of the day or night we want to?
That's a great point. You sound different too. You guys been drinking? You got helium balloons or what over there?
We've been drinking.
No,
I'm not proud of that. But
but you know what, DJ, you make a great point, and that is you have simplified a lot of things here because all you got to do is get the two teams to want to play. Now, in general, you look at a lot of things. When a game gets rained out, you look at, first of all, the home team looks at, hey, if we're injured right now, let's push that makeup date as far out as we can so that maybe when we play them again, we'll have a full roster. That's usually what managers do first. And then you kind of go from there and see how you can squeeze it in. But you're right, there is simplicity in that. And you only got, hey, just make sure everybody on the team knows. And like you said, make sure the television production crew and the radio guys know. And we'll play tomorrow at 2. Okay, see you back here then. That's a lot different than what they've had to go through in the past. And it's a process. You call into the league, they got approved dates, all that stuff. But I'm sure that, as you look at some of the positives, that would be one. They've got a lot of flexibility, and it's much easier to get things done that way.
Maxie, I know, you know, many of these players are very well paid, and sometimes I hear on the streets people say, yeah, you know, okay, they're going to have to play, and some of them aren't excited. Some of them, other teams, some of the players have opted out of this season. But the feedback I get is, look, they're well compensated. They're, you know, we're paying them to take these risks, which I don't know. I don't care how much money you have. If you got, you know, a wife and kids at home, you want to keep them safe. I couldn't help but notice Mitch Garver on record saying there's not enough information out there for us to feel completely safe.
No,
it feels like
right.
a lot of guys are going out there thinking they're going to get sick, but everything is going to be fine when it's over. And hopefully that'll be the case. But what do you think in terms of the safety element, keeping players and staff safe? They're not wearing masks out there, are they, at the stadiums?
They can if they want, and some are. When they practice, some of the players have masks on. All the non-playing personnel do, meaning Rocco Baldelli and his staff have masks on. Everybody but the guys that are playing, it's optional for them. Many of them did have masks on. Now, you bring up an interesting question, and that is, every player, it looks like, has you know, there have been a lot of different decisions as to who they bring with them to Minnesota. Jorge Polanco spoke today, the all-star shortstop, about bringing his wife and child or children. I'm not sure if it's multiple for him, but they've made the decision that they're going to be here. They're going to stay at home. He'll go back and forth to the ballpark. Other players have said, you stay home where it's safe. I'm going to go to Minnesota and play, or wherever it is. I'm going to go there and play the season out. And that's a tall task. I mean, the NBA could, you know, you could be there for in Orlando without your family because they're putting them in a bubble, in essence, you know, for a few months. And again, anybody that has young kids knows, A, you miss them a lot, and you want and need to be with them, and B, it's not fair to have just your wife taking care of them for that long either if you can't. And so a lot of guys have had to make tough decisions that way, and many have opted just to come up by themselves and try to minimize any risk. And that's not just in Major League Baseball, but obviously they don't have a choice in the NBA. WNBA is down there right now getting ready for their 22-game season, and the NHL will commence on Monday. But you know, part of the problem, Paul, is when you, like the NHL take, or the NBA, you go away to the playoffs, you have no idea how long you're going to be there. You could get eliminated in the first round, or you could be playing for a right. long time, and that could be a long time without your family, and that does matter to these guys.
When we come back, Maxie, I want you to weigh in on the NBA, which has apparently given permission for players to put social messages on their jerseys,
yeah.
which blows me away. I want to talk about that with Maxie next. A little bit of Boston, more than a feeling. This was my anthem in college. Love this tune. Love Boston. It's more than a feeling. It's heat exhaustion. Hot and sweaty. Anxious for the NBA to kick off down at Disney World. They're going to be in their own little cocoon, quarantined in Orlando. And the NBA has apparently given permission for players to put social messaging on their jerseys. I don't know how much you can get onto a jersey, but it's going to be interesting. And I'll be curious if the commentators, the color commentary, the guys and gals on ESPN, will they acknowledge what some of the players have on their jerseys? Boy, it's a brave new world, isn't it, Max?
It is, but it's this thing is tainted and watered down, and here's why. They're making okay. it, as of now, a multiple choice kind of thing. So you get to pick what they've with what they've selected. So you cannot have something vulgar or anything else. So some of the players are right. going, well, don't give me that. Don't give me a multiple choice that you guys have decided are the slogans of the day. If you want to do this, then I'll create my own, but don't give me I can either check A, B, C, D, or E. So there is some, you know, obviously the NBA is trying to keep control of it and show that they're dialed in to all everything that's going on socially right now. Somewhere in there, you know, the NBA is trying to extend themselves to the players, and the players are kind of going, eh, I'm not so sure about this. Sounds to me like you're trying to have your cake and eat it too. So I don't know how that's going to play out. And I think some players are just going to say, just forget it. I don't need to make a selection based on what you tell me. If you want me to do it, then I'll do it on my own terms.
Interesting. I also want to ask you about this. I don't want to belabor the issue, but I'm fascinated by this. And I'm wondering, maybe one of our listeners knows of a team name that is offensive to white Americans. And if so, please text us or call us, because I'd like to know, when it comes to Native Americans, the original Americans, the people, the men and women that were here before our ancestors arrived, it's interesting to me, we've got this reckoning. And it's not just the Washington Redskins. I mean, the Cleveland Indians, the Atlanta Braves. Think about it. Kansas City Chiefs, Chicago Blackhawks, the Florida State Seminoles, the Utah Utes.
Yeah, MIAC got it right. They just stuck to, hey, St. John's Johnnies, Thomas Tommies. Nobody can take umbrage with anything there, can they?
When the Vikings, right, there's no issue with them.
I don't think so, but you know what, Paul? I don't bet against anything. If they say the Vikings ravaged and raped on their way to here in Norway, and I certainly hear that, who knows what debate that they could make on that. But we were talking about yesterday a little bit. We already saw this. This wave has already occurred at the high school and, to an extent, the college level. You know, where I grew up, we were the Spartans. Next door to us was the Arlington Green Isle Indians. That's gone. The Winthrop Warriors were on the other side of us. That's gone. And on and on. So the high schools have kind of led in this surge. They're the ones that have eliminated, not completely, but it was so commonplace when I was growing up. There was just it seemed like a smattering of names to choose from. And the Indians and the Warriors and the things like that were it, and now they've converted into, the Wolverines and the Thunderhawks and the this and the that, but nothing that can be seen as politically incorrect. By the way, Paul, I was driving around some today, and I was at quite a few different places, and it is amazing how much activity there is right now, because it's been lifted so that high school kids and high school and younger can work out at schools. It's going on all over. I mean, I saw the Blake tennis, the Eden Prairie football, the Edina this. I was indoors. I was at a basketball facility where they were working out. The high school kids are back in full force. Football teams can work out. There's regulations.
Great.
Basketball teams can work out. Tennis teams can work out. And if you drive around the Twin Cities, and I know not that many people are maybe leaving their homes right now, but I spend a lot of my time out and about. I was just surprised today, pleasantly to an extent, I guess, depending on how you look at it, but to see how much activity there was throughout the suburbs. I don't know if they're going to get to play a season or not, but for right now, they're allowed to practice, and they've got specifications and social distancing, but I was surprised at how many different teams and activities I saw going on.
A lot of relieved parents. Get the kids out of the house, please.
Brother,
work off that energy, please.
Now they're dealing with, they want everybody outside as best you can. Well, now you're dealing with this oppressive heat,
Yeah.
And especially on everybody got their wish in the Twin Cities now, and everybody has a turf field. Well, you know what that turf field does to the temperature, the field temperature, Paul.
Oof.
What's it take it up, about 10 degrees or so?
At least 10 to 20 at least.
Yeah, so that's what they're playing in this afternoon, but there's still ample kids out there doing it.
Hey, what's coming up on Sports to the Max this evening?
We are going to have Randy Sampson on as Canterbury Park tries to go through this. Dr. Scott Jensen, a senator who is now under attack for he believes that some of the deaths that are death certificates that say COVID-19 are actually there's an underlying cause, and they're trying to write them off as COVID-19, and that changes the numbers. So he's being investigated by the medical board, and he's going to come on with us and explain that. There's a girl named, not a girl, she's a woman named Amna Kiran. This is my favorite story of the night. She came over from Pakistan in 2008, her and her husband, penniless, lived the American dream. She's a teacher now at Andover. She got a master's degree here. They bought two convenience stores. Her son started playing basketball, and she said, I want to learn how to play basketball because I never was allowed to in Pakistan. She got involved. She's learning how to play basketball with the help of a trainer and coach. That one of their convenience stores was ravaged in the riot. I mean, they looted it and almost tore it down. They built it back up in the spirit of why they're here, and it's a great story that we're going to bring you tonight.
We will be tuned in. Mike Max, thank you for your perspective.
Thanks, Paul.
and your friendship. You bet. Hang in there, buddy. Hey, when we come back, online shaming. I've got questions, and I'm hoping you've got some answers. Next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.